Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Humans of Excess Manchester at Home with me, Clint Boone. Across this mini-series, we're talking to some more inspirational Mancunians to continue to celebrate the spirit of our city whilst we're all in lockdown. This week, I'm joined by music promoter, manager, venue owner and festival founder, Ben Taylor. Ben talks about his favourite moments at some of the many venues that he's worked at.
The shows that stick out, 1975 in Sound Control in the 150 cap room with Catfish opening up the show, was like mind-blowing. Like, those things don't come around every now and again, do they?
And he talks about creating his very own Manchester festival, You Are Not Alone.
I lost 4 friends in like the space of 18 months. And so it's something that was close to me. And I really wanted to give something back. So I thought, you know what? I've not really seen any. I've seen little events popping up, but I thought it'd be great to just give a really good day back to the city in aid of Manchester Minded, who do such a brilliant job.
Gives me great pleasure to introduce a chap who I've had the honour of working with in many different capacities over the years. I've DJed for him many a time. I've put on events with him and I've often championed bands that he's managed or brought to me. His name's Ben Taylor. Welcome to Humans of Excess Manchester at Home. Ben, are you all right, man?
I'm great, man. How are you? Good to see you.
Strange times, isn't it? Very surreal times, because up until probably 4 or 5 weeks ago, if I'd have seen you in the Northern Quarter, as I often did, it'd be instant hugs, wouldn't it, and all that business. But that's all gone out the window now, hasn't it?
Not that anymore, mate.
Do you think even at the other end of it, do you think we'll ever get back to hugging and all that business or not?
Yeah, I think so. I think some people might be a bit standoffish, maybe. Some people that you didn't really like but wanted to hug, they won't be happening anymore, will they?
I was talking to a good friend of ours a couple of days ago, Nick Fraser.
Yes.
He does a lot of work with Tim Burgess and the Charlatans, and he was saying, I've never been a fan of that hugging business anyway, mate. He always was an awkward hugger, wasn't he? So he's happy now that all the hugging's gone out the window. So generally, Ben, how are you coping with the lockdown, you know, like practically, not in a business sense at the moment, just the day-to-day?
Trying to keep as busy as possible, like everyone else is. Trying to get that exercise in, trying to keep my brain kind of ticking over. Difficult, really, isn't it, what we do? Because a lot of it is based out and about, and suddenly not having that facility to go out and speak to people and catch bands and do what we do. It's difficult. I mean, music obviously is still, the good thing is people are still releasing music, so new music's coming out all the time, which is perfect, because you can still be looking fun for that future, can't you?
Yeah. Well, it looks like you're in a comfier board, and I know you've got 2 beautiful dogs in the house as well, have you?
You know what? We have 4 at the minute.
We'll have a look at the dogs in a bit. Let's start by talking about right at the beginning of your story. Where were you born? And tell us about your family. I mean, I know your family, but tell us and tell about your family.
Yeah, born in Stepping Hill in Stockport in 79. So, yeah, really good family, like really supportive of everything that I've ever wanted to do, whether it be, it was sport originally for me. Sport was the thing. It was like football. Whereas Jay and Beth, me, mum and dad, we were all kind of like focused on the music side of things. It wasn't really sport, wasn't really a thing. My dad was a big football fan, but Beth and Jay, not at all. So it was a bit later that the kind of like the music came in and my mum and dad allowed me to get a drum kit, and it kind of blossomed from there, really. But yeah, great family. Like, nothing but the best memories of my childhood.
Your mum was a singer, wasn't she?
She was a show dancer.
All right, dancer, okay.
Yeah, so that's how my mum and dad met. They met in 64. My mum was working on a show, and my dad was in the backing band, and yeah, it blossomed from there, and they came up and started the family. My dad moved to Manchester in 65, and that's how it all began.
I know that you occasionally post pictures of your mum up online. She was a beautiful woman.
Yeah, she was the best. Yeah, nothing but the best things to say about my mum. Yeah, the whole family, you know.
Whereabouts in Manchester did you grow up?
Heaton Moor in Stockport. Lived there from day dot to up until I was like 18, 19, moved to Heaton Chapel, and then slowly but surely settled into the city centre, but I've been around all, you know, all over the gaff. But Heaton Moor, that's where it was, school, and, you know.
Lovely part of the world as well, isn't it? How did you get on at school? Were you a clever kid?
When I put my mind to it, I was always talking to teachers that, I could be somebody. But there was, I had my moments, but then I kind of, my head was so focused on, like, football and the sports side of things. It's like, and then music, I did all right. I did okay.
When did the love of music come in?
You know what? Quite late for me. It was always around the house. There's like, my dad would be playing Fats Domino, my mum would be playing ABBA, Jay would be playing some punk stuff, Beth would be listening to like the Beastie Boys or Cud or something like that. So in terms of having it around, it was always there. I love all of those acts. I think it was probably like 13, 14 where I started listening to the radio a bit more. I think 15 was when I got my first drum kit. So I was paying attention to certain records. Listening to the drum styles and try and just copy them. No lessons, just had the kit in my room every time my mum and dad went out. So yeah, I'd say it was a bit later, but 15 I was in.
So Ben, tell us what were the first records you ever bought?
First records I bought? You know what, it took a while for me to actually buy a record. I remember Jay gave me records like G-Love and Special Sauce. Beth gave me a full selection of like Cud and Beastie Boys records. I was buying Stone Roses records, Charlton's records, you know, those Shine compilations. They were like a big part of me learning about Manchester music, really. And you were on that, I remember.
Nice one.
Those Shine compilations were kind of worn out.
Yeah, they were brilliant, weren't they?
Yeah.
Can you remember when you first started going watching bands? What bands would they have been?
Jay and Beth were in bands. So a lot of the time it'd be going to the Boardwalk to watch Gold Blade play that Jay was in, or going to see Dumb, or a reincarnation of Dub Sex. So a lot of those ones were going to see them, or Deep Percussion, and then we're starting to go to Reading Festival and V Festival, and yeah, it was great. Yeah, make 5 out of 7 nights a week I'd be at shows, you know, definitely.
And you started, it was your first job in a record shop, was it Our Price?
It was my second job. My first job was in a fishmonger's, believe it or not. It was in Edgeley. It was a big supermarket. Didn't enjoy that. And then, went to Our Price as a temp, worked with my sister, actually. And then went from there. So worked, Stockport, Mersey Way, Trafford Centre, King Street. That was fun. I was a buyer, so it was great. Kind of like trying to determine what was going to sell and, you know, getting the stock right. Yeah, really enjoyable that.
And that sounds like a dream job for somebody your age in this part of the world back then.
God, you know what? I could memorise. I was like Rain Man. You could tell me like an album and I'd be able to tell you the catalogue number. It was a big part of learning, you know.
And that was it. Since then, you've never left the music industry, have you, technically?
No. It's been from working in the record shop. I started putting on a night called No Way Back at Night and Day. Jay was at Night and Day as the announced promoter. Built up a monthly night, just booking my friends' bands really on MySpace. I remember leaving Our Price because it was doing well, and I did it twice a month, and it was enough to pay the bills. I'd get up and just sit in front of the laptop and listen to music and book 4 local bands with 1 DJ. I remember the first birthday party. It was like the Cortinas' first ever show. They didn't even have a bass player. We like the Whip headlined, Pete from Elbow DJed, Liam Frost DJed. It was great. And I was like, man, that's when I really thought, I think this could be my thing. Jay left to go and work at 235 and they offered me a little bit, but needed it, I think.
And that's what you moved to Night and Day. You were there for a few years then, weren't you?
It was great. Yeah, I did some good shows there. We did like put on Foals in that venue, C6 Steve. There's some really good acts. And then moved from there to the Roadhouse, which is a big dream for me. That was always... When I started playing music, it was always like, oh man, we've got to get the Roadhouse. That was the big one. So being there as like the guy that did that, fucking on the other hand, great. Another amazing venue. I miss it dearly.
They are all these venues. I mean, when I was getting ready to chat to you today, I was looking through the notes and that, like, the Night and Day, just a unique place, and the Roadhouses and Jimmy's was and Sound Control. It's just, we're blessed, aren't we? Yeah. They've got these amazing venues in the city.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, it's only really now that Sound Control, I'm beginning to really miss it.
Yeah.
From what we did, because we were there, I was there from the day we got the keys and to the day that it shut. And it was a big part of the city, wasn't it? Sometimes it's hard when you're involved in it to really grasp how much it meant to people. But in fact, I think something like online popped up and it was like people... The day that we announced it was shutting, just like tons and tons of people either played there, drank there, met people. yeah. got engaged in there. It was a big, big thing. So yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame that it came to an end, that one.
For those who don't know, the sound control venue, it was 500 capacity on three stories, on it three floors.
The full cap was 1,300 at one point. So it was like, yeah, we had three stages. It was, yeah, the 500 cap, 350 in the basement and 150 on that middle floor. Yeah. So sometimes we'd have three shows in a night, you know, it was great.
And how shocked or how upset were you when it closed? Well, what, A, when it closed, and B, when it got knocked down? They seemed to demolish it within weeks, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. You know what? I kind of knew it was coming to an end. So by the time that it did, I'd kind of come to terms with that. And I knew I was going into the management side of things. So I was going straight into something else. And my mind was focused on that. So it being knocked down and not seeing it there in a big hole when you turn that corner onto Oxford Road, it was like, wow. Yeah, that was a big shock. I mean, even now when you go past it and they're putting up that big skyscraper,
I know.
It's like, man, we had some good nights in that space.
Well, I started going in that building in the 70s when it was a music shop. It was A1 Music. So that's, I mean, when the Inspiral started, I went in there to buy keyboards and amps and all sorts of things. And then it became Sound Control, the music shop, didn't it?
Yeah, it's where I bought my first drum kit.
Is it really? Yeah. Wow. Do you still play drums?
You know what? When I was doing the management side of things, I would drum tech for the bands as well. And that's the only time I really get to get back on it. Or with a band, say we had a show at Jimmy's and I'd have a kit set up and the band would go off. I'd jump on and have a bit of a go. But no, I miss it every now and again. Right. The setting up of a drum kit though and packing it down. It's enough to make me want to stop forever, you know.
Hard work, innit? You spent some time managing bands. I don't know if you're still technically managing them, but you set up a management company, Beautiful Noise.
That's right.
And you got to work with quite a few bands and DJs. How did you find that? What attributes do you think a person needs to be a good band manager?
You need to be a people person, really. It's you need to have that. You need to be mentally prepared for phone calls 24/7.
Yeah.
Putting in the hard work and being that first port of call for a bunch of people. I think we had at one point five bands on the books. So being responsible for essentially their careers is, you know, it's a big task. I enjoyed it. There's a very, very strong chance I might be dipping myself back in with that. But
okay.
As we stand, no. I'd say when I got the Jimmy's offer, I kind of had to throw 100% into that. So I had to stop, unfortunately. But so those bands are doing great, you know, still.
Yeah. It's a bit like babysitting, isn't it, being a band manager?
Exactly right. I wish you could have said that to some of them.
Well, having been in a band myself for all them years, I know what it's like. It's like there's no bloody way that I'd be a manager, me. No way.
Yeah, you know what? There's good times and there's really bad times. But I used to get more pleasure of seeing one of my bands play in front of a packed room than I ever did playing in front of one, actually. It was a different kind of buzz.
Let's talk about Jimmy's then, because that was another fascinating venue. In fact, unique again. It was just something that was totally new in a city like Manchester. I can't believe we didn't have a venue like that before, because it was just like, it felt like it'd been there forever and it felt like it was created for the city. Well, it actually was, wasn't it? What was so special about Jimmy's Manchester?
Yeah, with Jimmy's, it kind of created its own family within the city, I think. I think every time you went in there, you'd know somebody. You could be in there in the daytime, you'd bump into someone and they wouldn't leave till like 1 a.m. Great team. Just a place for musicians as well. You'd always go in there, you'd see bands hanging out. It was fun, very fun. A lot of hangovers from that place.
And you were involved with Jimmy's when they launched in Liverpool, weren't you? How did such a mank brand, how did that get accepted by the Scouse crowd? Did they go for it right away?
It was super welcoming, yeah. They've lost a lot of venues in Liverpool, so a lot shut down in the 12 months prior to Jimmy's opening the Liverpool venue. So I think it was a breath of fresh air getting something new and something so different. So it's three floors with a live music venue in the basement, bar in the middle floor, and a restaurant, which in the end opened up on the first floor. So where we were, it was like in the, you know, on top of Bold Street in front of the Bondout Church. It was received well. Liverpool's different to Manchester. It's a lot, the nightlife, although people are always going out, it's a lot different to the Manchester music scene. It's more difficult. People seem to take more of a punt on local bands in Manchester than they do in Liverpool. So I think people know what they want in Liverpool. Whereas Manchester, you'd take a punt and you just go to Night and Day, or you'll go to the Deaf Institute on the off chance you're going to see something really great. It didn't seem like it was fully that in Liverpool. It's like people knew what they wanted, which isn't a bad thing.
Right.
It's different. You know, you have to think as a promoter, you had to think a bit differently.
Before this lockdown started, you were working on a new festival that you created last year, the Yana Festival. Tell us about that.
Yannerfest, which is short for You Are Not Alone Festival. I mean, everyone's been through their own mental health issues, I'm sure, and have lost people to it. I lost four friends in like the space of 18 months. And so it's something that was close to me. And I really wanted to give something back. So I thought, you know what? I've not really seen any. I've seen little events popping up, but I thought it'd be great to just give a really good day back to the city in aid of Manchester Minded, who do such a brilliant job. And it's non-profit. And everybody, as soon as I put that message out, it was like I was inundated with people who wanted to play and telling me their own stories about it. And it came together really quickly. I think I announced it in November, and the show was in March, and it sold out 4 weeks before or something. And it was brilliant. It was over three venues, and it raised a bunch of money. And it was just a great day. The sun was shining in Manchester. It was brilliant. Yeah. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to do it again. So I had it booked in for March this year, five venues, kind of put the cap up a little bit. And then obviously the virus hit, and then we've had to move it. And I've moved it to the back end of November. Yeah. Whether or not I'm going to maybe move it again to March the following year, I don't know. But it's great. Andy Burnham's been really supportive of it. It's good. And it's really helped me with my mental health, actually, even working on something that I know, even if it helps one person or allows Manchester Mind a bit more funds to be able to operate further down the line, you know, that was something I feel really proud of.
Of all the events you've put on, what have been your favourite moments as a event manager or promoter?
Favourite moments? The charity stuff I've done over time has been, I love dogs. Dogs are like a big part of my life. So when the dog home got burnt down, put on a fundraiser for that, and it was brilliant. Again, loads of Rowetta, loads of people came on board of that. It was such a top day. So I do get a good buzz off the charity events. That's something I'll always carry on doing. The shows that stick out, 1975 in Sound Control in the 150 cap room with Catfish opening up the show, was like mind-blowing. Like, those things don't come around every now and again, do they? So there was ones where big bands that have gone on to do great things or play arenas when you've had them in the smaller venues, they always stick out for me.
Who've been the nicest people you've worked with?
Ooh, you're going to ask me the worst as well.
Yeah, probably.
the nicest. I mean, I've formed some really great friendships that I'll have for life. Cortina's from doing that first show. Liam's like a really good pal. All of them are. Liam Frost. I'm thinking about people who are local. The Everything Everything Boys. Yeah. It's for all the bad eggs, there's a lot more good eggs, right?
Yeah, definitely.
There's tons. Yeah, but locally, Manchester, yeah, they throw up some good people.
I won't ask you about the people that haven't been nice. Yeah, let's talk about lockdown business again, because like a lot of us, you've been massively affected by it. I mean, as a DJ, I've lost 60% of my income, and I almost lost a radio gig as well, as you probably heard. But Excess is it lives on. Yeah. Excess lives on.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
We know that everything's going to be different when it all kicks back in, but are you feeling generally optimistic about the music scene for the city?
Yeah, like I was saying earlier on, it's like people are still releasing records. People are still, they're doing these Zoom things where there's a drummer sat in one corner, there's a guitarist sat in the other, and they're fighting and things, good things will come out of the back of this. Like they do. That's just what we do as a city. It's like everyone groups together and we fight. And those first run of shows when we do get open again, can you imagine? It's going to be, it'll be something else. It'll be some party.
I'll tell you, it'll be like when the war ended, won't it? I wasn't there when the second war ended. But
I mean, I'm probably going to swerve going into the city for a little while, I think. But it'll be kind of like street parties the lot, right?
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. Let's talk about that Manchester spirit. You touched on it there, and that's what this podcast is all about, the spirit of the city and why people come here and fall in love with it, why people like us stay because we love it. What do you see as the Manchester spirit? How would you define it?
I would say we've been through a lot, haven't we, as a city? We really, really have. I mean, I'm biased, but I do feel that we as a breed are different to the rest. I think we get knocked down so much, and we always come out of it stronger each and every time. And I don't think that'll ever stop. So yeah, the more we get hit with these things, I think it can only make the city stronger, and produce more strong music. It's gonna be. I can't wait to hear what comes off the back of it. It'll be good for me. It'll be kind of like starting fresh again.
It is. It's like the world's resetting itself, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a bad thing.
Do you ever envisage a time where you might move away? If you got offered an amazing job in LA, would you take it?
Ah, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
If the money was right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one dream of mine has always been, since I started doing this, I'd love to go and do what I do in New York. I'd love it. I love the scene over there. I think it's brilliant. I think it's very similar to what we have here, actually.
Yeah.
So that'd be nice. Yeah, I do love Manchester. I mean, I lived in Liverpool when we opened the Jimmy, so I was there for 9 months, and that was good. But ultimately, I wanted to come home, and I'm back.
And you did, and we all welcomed you back with open arms. I remember getting the news you were coming back to Manchester and all like that. Hey, Ben's coming back.
No, it feels amazing to be back. I know, obviously, I've only seen this street and the field around the corner, but yeah. I can't wait to get cracking again.
What are your favourite places in town? Clubs, first of all, them. So modern clubs before the shutdown, obviously.
You know what? I was a big fan of Gillies. You know, do you remember Rock World?
Yeah,
Gillies.
Yeah.
Spent a lot of time in there, Thursday, Friday, Saturdays. Albert Hall, I love. The Apollo and the Ritz. All always means so much to me.
Yeah.
Sound Control, I guess. Sound Control is the one that's like, when I look back at it and go, that was like 9 years of seven nights a week. Night and Day, again, big family spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who are your favourite humans of Manchester ever? Ben, give us a few names.
Yeah, I've got a couple. I'd say Rennie from the Roses is one of my, probably my number one. Now, you know what? Joint number one, but he's he made me want to pick up the drumsticks and get into that. I remember having me, my sister, Pete Garner, and him went to watch Jay play at the Witchwood in Ashton when he was in Goldblade, and Rennie gave me some really good drumming advice. So from that moment on, I was like, I want to be a drummer.
What was the advice, Ben?
To be loose, you know, it was to be loose when you play. So in terms of just sticking to that 4/4 beat, loosen it up. He's like, don't be afraid to kind of loosen up your arms. I remember it, and it stuck in my head, and I thought, all right, still trying to do that. Like, but it's but yeah, no, that was from that moment on. I was like, I want to do what he does. So I did, and we did for a bit, but not as good as Rennie, I'm afraid. I can't do that double kick drum.
Any other favourite humans of Manchester?
I'd say Lowry, you know. I said, look, I love the way that he captures the streets. I used to live right by his statue in Mottram as well, so I'd walk past that every day, and right by a house I used to live in around the corner. And my dad, I mean, he's an honorary monk, my dad, but he's lived an amazing life. He played with Jerry Lee Lewis, he played with Joe Brown and the Brothers. He's a Londoner, my dad, so he's an honorary monk, but he got me into Arsenal, is a big thing, big love of mine. And he's been there for me, you know, every time it's kind of hit my lowest, he's been there. He's a hero.
Right. Have you got one of your dogs nearby before we...
He's upstairs. Go and get him.
Yeah, bring the dog down. It'll be the first dog to feature on the podcast, so let's get him down.
Right, here we go.
Right, who's this?
Here he is. So this is Rascal.
Rascal, how are you?
Is that?
It's a new podcast, isn't it? Dogs of Excess Manchester.
Mate, you need to get me to present that one. So I was just going to say, having the dogs at this time is just like a godsend.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, getting to go out with them. They're keeping me sane.
We're the same. We've got a little cabochon called Dolly. She's two, and she's keeping us in a good place at the moment.
Beautiful, yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
So, Ben, before we go, man, describe Manchester in three words.
Proud, passionate, love.
Fantastic. Ben Taylor, thank you for being a human of Excess Manchester.
Thanks, Clint. Great to see you.
That was Ben Taylor. On the next episode, I'll be joined by Mancunian actress Maxine Peake. Don't forget to follow us on social media and subscribe to Humans of Excess Manchester. Rate us, feel free to leave us a review. We always like to hear what you think of our work. Stay safe and look after each other, Manchester. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.